They're like, we're going to design this building, so 1,000 years from now, it's going to be like the Parthenon.
It's so stupid. I have to imagine that this guy is probably has an equivalent somewhere near Trump. Trump just talks to him every day about everything needs to be gold and how he needs to demolish it for a ballroom.
It's the guy that's like gold spray painting the wall sponsors from like Hobby Lobby. and then it's billing him as though they're like gold plated. It's like telling him like it's a really good deal on these.
Gold spray paint is sold out in a 50-mile radius around Washington, D.C.
Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve.
Hi, all.
And Ryan.
Oh, that was really quick. God damn it.
Yeah, that sounded broken. That sounded like you were just like hitting tinfoil or something. Like you're out of soda. You need some money? Listen,
if you want me to hit the tinfoil, Jeffrey Epstein is still alive and he got outed by a Fortnite account. If you don't want me to hit the tinfoil, Brad Arnold
from
Three Doors Down died today and it is super sad. So
The New York financier? Jeffrey Epstein?
Yeah, that guy. Yeah, that guy.
What happened?
No, actually, the podiatrist.
The Fortnite teammate?
The Fortnite teammate?
If you want to put your tinfoil hat on, the account that was spotted was made like a decade ago. So it is also the same email that is linked in the Jeffrey Epstein files, and it was seen making transactions up to as recent as a couple of weeks ago. And then the very first mention.
Dude, because my man's still alive. He's in fucking Israel.
Yeah, so the first mention of this occurring happened like a week or so ago. But as it was almost a couple hours later after the first mention came out, the account went private. So we know there's activity on it, there's transactions on it, and it's the same email address that is referenced in the Epstein files. Dog, if he's alive and in Israel got outed by Fortnite, it is going to be fucking hilarious.
This is the same thing that happened, you know, when the Roswell debris, and they're just like, we got a UFO, and then they change their story. Yeah. People are doing ass pulls. Like we got to cover this up real fast.
Real fast. Get off Fortnite, you fucking idiot.
Oh no.
He bought the Nicki Minaj skin. But yeah, seriously, the lead singer Three Doors Down died. It's still pulling out for Brad Arnold, unfortunately.
Yeah, I guess he wasn't Superman.
Oh my god.
He would have loved that joke, man. He's a good guy.
Oh, that would have been hilarious. Yeah. But speaking of Superman.
I mean, some would say, not me, but some would say that Aryan Supermen are our superiors.
Oh, God, don't do this.
Who are we talking about this week, Bo?
And that's why today, boys, we're going to be starting our conversation on one Albert Speer.
Oh, Albert Speer, the Minister of War. Or Hitler's munitions.
Yes, Minister of Munitions mainly, and primarily an architect.
Yeah, I got his. I have his book.
Yeah, I have both his autobiographies. We'll get to it probably in the next episode. But fun fact, you know, Colonel Winters from Band of Brothers.
Yeah,
yeah.
He was the commandant of Spandau Prison, and he beat the shit out of Albert Speer.
I feel like that's a good thing. I should only cheer that man. You should definitely cheer anybody who goes and fucking break Nazi fans.
What can he do?
But Bertold Conrad Hermann Albert Speer was born on March 19th, 1905 in Mannheim into an upper middle class family. He was the second
Mannheim
son.
Yes.
The Fighting Bulldogs. He was the second of three sons of Louise Mathilde Wilhelmine and Albert Friedrich Speer.
What, they just fucking do that in like the German name boggle? Like it's like just roll some dice and that's their name.
His mother considered them to be very high class, which will come up very soon in like the type of environment that he came up in.
Oh, okay.
In she wasn't realistic.
We live here at the Vista View, and there ain't no Vista, and there certainly ain't no damn view. Fucking white man.
In 1918, the family leased their Mannheim residence and moved to a home they had in Heidelberg.
This guy likes to say Mannheim a lot.
He does.
A deputy prosecutor at the Nuremberg trials, Henry T. King, who wrote a book about Speer, said love and warmth were lacking in the household of Speer's youth.
Henry T. King sounds like a pseudonym that like a dumb king uses at a bowling alley, you know, like when he signs for something.
It was Germany. And what year is this that we're talking about right now?
This is like 19. Well, he was born in 1905, but around like, yeah, it's before World War One is when he was born.
Yeah, so we're going to talk like 1910 Germany. Oh, no, there wasn't a lot of sympathy, a lot of warmth. You don't fucking say.
Word.
His brothers, Ernst and Hermann, bullied him throughout his childhood.
Ernst.
Probably good.
He was active in sports, taking up skiing and mountaineering. But he would ultimately follow in the footsteps of his father and grandfather and studied architecture.
Interesting.
He began his architectural studies at the University of Karlsruhe instead of a more highly acclaimed institution because the hyperinflation crisis of 1923, you know, when you see those pictures of people with like wheelbarrows full of like Deutschmarks that they're taking to like buy a loaf of bread. That's like this brief period. Limited his parents' income. But by 1924, when this crisis had abated, which is another thing, when people talk about like the post-war, like the hyperinflation, this level of hyperinflation, it's not like Zimbabwe, like it only lasted like a year or two at most.
Okay.
It was not something that happened like until the Nazis took power. It was something that briefly happened and people got a lot of photos of, and then they could use it as an excuse. And one of the reasons why they did this was to pay back the Treaty of Versailles because they had to pay back reparations. And like when you have inflation, that's good for you when you're paying back your debts.
Right. No, guys. This is definitely how much I owe you. Look at how much money my money's worth.
Well, you said I owe you $10,000, but now a dollar is worth $10,000. So here is your money.
Here's your dollar.
But in 1924, he would transfer to the quote unquote more reputable Technical University of Munich. In 1925, he would transfer again, this time to the Technische Hochschule Berlin Charlottenburg, now the Technische Universität Berlin, where he studied under Heinrich Tessenow, whom he greatly admired.
What was the name of that school? In English, please. We fought World War II, so I didn't have to listen to stupid accents.
It's the Technical University. It's the Technical University of Berlin.
Okay, there we go. I love saying that. Like, listen, man, we fought World War II, so I don't have to hear them shitty accents. Let's go. English, please. Realistically, on that note, we should actually be listening to everything with a Russian accent if we really want to get technical, but, you know.
That's true.
A lot of people aren't ready for that conversation yet.
After passing his exams in 1927, Speer became Tessenow's assistant, which was a high honor for him since he was only 22 at the time. So at this time, Speer essentially became like a GA, like a graduate assistant, like where he's actually like teaching classes.
And like he a would German do this asshole. While he
could... What too? But he would begin to be he would teach classes while he was pursuing his degree.
Interesting.
My boy's wicked smart.
Wicked fucking smart. Kid.
And then we go to the friend that would try to impersonate him in a job interview to get money. In Munich, Speer began a close friendship which would last around over 50 years with Rudolf Wolters, who also studied under Tessenow. Wolters will become very important later on in his life.
They called him because his name sounds like it starts with a V, but it begins with a W, and he'd go, nice, und W, like that, and he'd get really upset about it.
That's when he just, like, smashes the table like the Ukrainian man.
999! God damn it. It's not
das ist eine Nusset table.
Das ist ein W.
in mid-1922, Speer began his relationship with Marguerite Weber, the daughter of a successful craftsman who employed around 50 workers.
Yeah, it's Margie Weber, man, of the bowling ball.
This relationship, though, was frowned upon by his mother, who felt that the Webers were beneath them socially.
Yo, they're trash, motherfuckers. They're trash.
Despite his mother's opposition to the marriage, the two would marry in Berlin on August 28, 1928. 7 years after this point would be the first time that Marguerite was actually invited to stay at her in-law's home.
Okay.
So his mother held a grudge for like 7 years because he married a woman who was just like firmly middle class.
That's okay.
What's the name of that?
I love rich people like that when they come up with really stupid fucking ideas to hold a grudge. Well, the king's not worth $1 billion yet, so we hate them. Like, what? Shut the fuck up.
I can't remember the name of that area in Philly that is like, it's not an area, but there's like a list of people in Philadelphia that are like very wealthy. It's called like the Old Philadelphians. And if you're not like on that list, you don't get certain privileges or something like that in the city. You ever heard of that?
There's like a who's who for that for like a lot of New England like major cities, because like Chevy Chase is on the one for Boston or New York, I think.
Yeah,
I'm damn sure it's not on one for Boston. Get the fuck out of here. Fucking piece of shit.
That's why he's on it. He got all in.
Right. All right. I'll take it.
Fair enough.
The couple would have six children together, although Albert would be increasingly distant from his family after 1933.
Okay.
This would continue after his release from prison in 1966, despite efforts to forge closer bonds with his family.
What did he go to prison for?
We'll talk about that.
Oh, God. What did he go to prison for?
In January of 1931, Speer applied for Nazi Party membership, and on March 1st, 1931, he became member number 4,074,481.
What? 4,074,481?
No, 4,000. It was 474,481.
Seems like an irrelevant figure. Like, why are you telling us that? I don't understand why we're being told.
Okay, so he's number 4.
That's like telling me his driver's license number. Like, who gives a shit?
Well, the number is like actually like the number like when he joined the party. Like, there's literally somebody who is number 1 on the party like roster.
You know, it's funny. So like, it's not that guy didn't even go through with it.
Who's number 1? I bet he's not even Hitler.
He's probably some Jewish guy.
It's not. I forget what Hitler's number was, but
he didn't have a number. He had a letter. It was just X.
But it was actually edited to be inaccurate that he was listed as like party number like 508 or something like that, because they only had like ten members.
The mambo number 5.
They only had like a dozen members, so they would make it like in the hundreds to make it seem like they had more members.
That's smart.
So he's probably like in member number 8.
That's smart, man.
Yeah, he was like member number 8, and they put him as like 508 or something like that.
Mm. Got it.
Like there was a lot of emphasis on the Nazis. Like when you joined the party, like if you had joined the party when they did the beer hall push, you got to wear like a special pin and a special ribbon that you would wear on your uniform if you were in the SS or the Wehrmacht. And it sort of showed that you were like part of like, you could wear this. It was called like a blood ribbon. And they also had different party badges, and like the number you were in the party and how long you had been in the party determined what badge you could wear. So this was actually like very important in the social stratification of like Nazi society. So like while Speer is not like an early Nazi joining in 1931, he's still joining in the period where they're like barely considered like acceptable.
Okay.
Because the Nazis sort of have like a thing, like a lot of like far right people today, like Bolsonaro or Trump.
Whoa, like they're not far right. Okay. Social. No, I'm just fucking.
Where where like everybody thinks they're a joke, but because conditions have gotten so bad and like they've been in the media, people are like beginning to listen to them and consider what they're saying. So they become more acceptable. And so it's a sort of like in the medium point. This is not like this is a year away from them taking the like they don't win the election. They win a plurality. They don't actually win a majority in the first election that gives them power. But this sort of shows that Speer is like he sees which way the wind is blowing. But it's not at a point where like if you had joined after this fact, they would sort of look down on you in a way. That same year, stipends were shrinking due to the depression. So Speer surrendered his position as Tessenow's assistant and moved to Mannheim, hoping to make a living as an architect.
There he goes again. Fucking Mannheim.
Instead, he started an orchestra.
Yeah.
After he failed to succeed as an architect, his father gave him a part-time job as manager of his properties. In July of 1932...
In the U.S., that's like the rich guy's version of like complete failure. well, I flunked out of my college position, Dad. Well, you can inspect homes for me. All right, come home.
Yeah, it's like the in the Big Lebowski, the other Lebowski.
Yeah,
it's like we just let Father manage some things since he ruined the actual businesses he ran.
The bomb's loose, Mr. Lebowski. The bomb's lost.
But in July of 1932, the Speers visit Berlin to help out the party with the Reichstag elections that are going on at that time. His friend, Nazi party official Karl Honka, recommended the young architect to Joseph Goebbels to help renovate the party's Berlin headquarters.
Hey, Joe. This guy.
Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah, yeah.
Right here.
Karl Honka would be like one of the last heads. I think he was the last head of the SS. So he was in it for the long haul, and he was a deep party guy.
If he asked me, if he was applying for a job or something, he asked me if he should have that on his resume, I'd probably say no, you know?
Probably a bad idea.
When they ask you what you were doing during that time, you say, I don't know, it was a crazy time.
Little of this, little of that.
You know, we're friends, but I don't think we're reference friends.
Serious question. What did the average person in Germany after World War II do? When it was kind of like, what did you do during that time? Did everybody just kind of like not talk about it? Like it was understood that you didn't speak about it? Or did they just kind of give like these vague non-answers? Like how did the average person like square themselves with that?
Well, generally my understanding is that most people didn't talk about it. But the thing that happens is that there's sort of a reckoning in the 60s and 70s where their children are sort of like, well, My parents are like war criminals, and we're not talking about this. And the fact that like people who are prominent members of the Nazi Party or who were SS like generals, for instance, were holding prominent like wealthy positions in society, and they thought this was wrong. And this leads to a lot of protests and also like far left like terrorism, like the Bader Meinhof group.
Right.
But instead of being like Japan, where they just sort of like go hard in the paint of like not like talking about it, they actually do address it as a society in West Germany, which is also the reason why in East Germany, like even to this day in Eastern Germany, since the fall of the Berlin Wall, it's been a hotbed for the AfD, which is like essentially the successor party to the Nazis.
Is that why they like? I mean, so I get it, like the pendulum swing in the other direction. They made it illegal for any kind of like Nazi swastika imagery or anything like that to be displayed. Well, but now you're starting to see it come back. And I'm assuming when you start to see that nonsense, it's from Eastern Germany.
Well, the difference is that the main issue is that in education in West Germany after the 1970s, it was that the German people perpetuated the Holocaust, that the Holocaust and World War II is the cross of the German people to bear. We did this. We have to own it. It doesn't mean we have to like permanently live in like supplication to this and like just be permanently like making amends for this. But we have to acknowledge it as a people and do our best to make amends for it. But in East Germany, what they essentially said was that we are a communist society. The communists were persecuted by the Nazis. We are not fascists. The fascists were defeated, so we are not guilty of anything the fascists did. And this leads to a line of thinking that allows for these sort of fascist ideas to take over, because the problem with fascism is that it is almost always a populist movement, and it is very good at meeting the grievances of people who come from the East who were left behind after unification.
Okay.
So a lot of the people whose careers were ended or who were left in a position, because a big problem that happened with East Germany is that they were not industrially or educationally on the same level as the West. And so the people who held more prominent positions in East Germany, they were sort of out of the job because their skill set was like out of date.
Gotcha.
Right. Like they're doing Windows 95.
98. Okay. Superior to 95 and all.
They're still running one of the three copies of Windows XP they were passing around, you know. And
dude, listen, in the IT office in a hospital that I used to work at, they were running Windows NT still. I was like, oh god, I feel like you guys are gonna get fucking smashed if somebody really decides to go after you.
Last time I even touched an NT server was 2008. Like, yeah, it was 2008. It was legit 2008.
Yeah, I think I saw this in 2014, maybe 15. I was like, holy shit.
That's a little crazy. Right.
When the commission on redoing the party's headquarters was completed, Speer returned to Mannheim and remained there as Hitler took office in January of 1933. The organizers of the 1933 Nuremberg rally asked Speer to submit designs for the rally, bringing him into contact with Hitler for the first time. Neither of the organizers for the rally, nor Rudolf Hess, were willing to decide whether to approve the plans for the rally, and Hess sent Speer to Hitler's Munich apartment to seek his approval. This work won Speer his first national post as the Nazi Party's Commissioner for the Artistic and Technical Presentation of Party Rallies and Demonstrations. Which in German will be just like one, like, 30-word, like, or 30-letter word.
Yeah. Albert Einbindeskrinenschmitten.
Shortly after Hitler came into power, he began to make plans to rebuild the Chancellery. At the end of 1933,
you just pronounce Hitler like so Philadelphia, it was ridiculous. You're like, not long after Hitler came to power, it's like, oh shit. That's when my grandfather had to get over there, so straighten him out. Know what I mean?
You want to live in a country where you can't get readers?
How am I going to go down to CYO and watch my cousin play basketball?
At the end of 1933, he contacted Paul Troost to renovate the entire building. Hitler appointed Speer, whose work for Goebbels had impressed him, to manage the building site for Troost. As chancellor, Hitler had a residence in the building and came by every day to be briefed by Speer and the building supervisor on the progress of the renovations. After one of these briefings, Hitler invited Speer to lunch, which Speer was very excited about. Speer quickly became part of Hitler's inner circle. He was expected to call on him in the morning for a walk or chat to provide consultation on architectural matters and to discuss Hitler's ideas. Most days he was invited to dinner. You have to remember, Hitler was like a weirdo, like, artist, so he just loved to ramble on about these things. And Speer had a lot of weird ideas about architecture. Like, he eventually developed something called, like, ruin theory.
Which is
that you would, like, design a building so that it would be in such a way that when it eventually decays into a ruin, it would be, like, aesthetically pleasing.
Oh my god.
They're like, we're going to design this building, so 1,000 years from now, it's going to be like the Parthenon.
It's so stupid. I have to imagine that this guy is probably has an equivalent somewhere near Trump, where Trump just talks to him every day about how everything needs to be gold and how he needs to demolish
it's
for a ballroom.
It's the guy that's like gold spray painting the wall sconces from like Hobby Lobby. and then is billing him as though they're like gold plated. Like telling him, like, I got a really good deal on these.
Gold spray paint is sold out in a 50-mile radius around Washington, D.C.
I just love that because the whole conversation, Trump was saying, like, they can't make anything that looks like gold, so you can't paint it gold. It has to be real gold. just like sure, Donald. Sure.
You're showing how cheap you are and how you are as just a human being, like outward expression, outward show of wealth while internally just completely devoid of value. Like just,
yep.
You're telling on yourself, Donald.
In the English version of his memoirs, Speer said that his political commitment merely consisted of paying his monthly dues to the party. He assumed, rightfully so, that his German readers would not be gullible enough to believe him in this, and he told them that the Nazi Party offered a quote-unquote new mission. He would be forthright in an interview with William Hampshire, in which he would say that he joined the party in order to quote-unquote save Germany from communism.
So I would love to hear him what the new mission is, or the new vision, or the new mission for the Nazi Party. Just like stare at him in his face. Like, what's the mission? What's the view? What do you want to do with this? Tell me about what you thought this money was going towards.
After the war, he claimed to have had little interest in politics at all and had joined almost by chance.
It's very similar to a conservative nowadays when they're just like, I'm being silenced for my views. Yeah, what views are you being silenced for? And just watch him sputter.
Like many of those in power in the Third Reich, he was not an ideologue, quote unquote, nor was he anything more than an instinctive anti-Semite. Historian Magnus Brechtin, discussing Speer, said he did not give anti-Jewish public speeches and that his anti-Semitism can best be understood through his actions, which were anti-Semitic.
Judge me on my actions, not what I say, bro. Your actions are anti-Semitic. Fuck!
Brechtian added, throughout Speer's life, his central motives were to gain power, rule, and acquire wealth.
Get money.
Get money, broke boy.
God, get rich or die trying.
This is like the original 50 Cent, dog.
No, I think 50's cool.
It's one of those really bad like rapper movies from like the early 2000s, but it's about the life of like Albert Speer.
Oh my god.
Get Deutschmarks or die trying.
Was it Hot Boys?
Oh my god. Holy shit, it's hilarious.
When Troyce died on January 21st, 1934, Speer effectively replaced him as the party's chief architect. Hitler appointed Speer as head of the chief office for construction, which placed him nominally on Hess's staff. One of Speer's first commissions after Troost's death was the Zeppelin Field Stadium in Nuremberg. This is the main site of Nazi propaganda rallies. It's the place, like, if you've seen the picture with, like, the searchlights, like, pointing straight up in the air with the huge banners, that is this stadium.
Is it really that big, or is it just tricks of the camera?
It's an actual, because they did the Olympics there, so it's, like, an actual, like, sports stadium.
Okay.
It can also be seen in Leni Riefenstahl's propaganda film, The Triumph of the Will. The building was able to hold 340,000 people. Speer insisted that as many events as possible be held at night, both to give greater prominence to his lighting effects and to hide the overweight Nazis.
Jesus Christ.
The times, they don't change. Nuremberg was the site of many official Nazi buildings. Many more buildings were also planned. If built according to his original plans, the stadium, the German stadium in Nuremberg would have accommodated 400,000 spectators. Speer modified Werner March's design for the Olympic Stadium being built for the 1936 Summer Olympics. He added a stone exterior that pleased Hitler. Speer designed the German pavilion for the 1937 International Exposition in Paris, which was opposite the Soviet one, because I guess the French thought it would be funny.
Oh my God.
On January 30th, 1937, Hitler appointed Speer as general building inspector for the Reich capital. This carried with it the rank of state secretary in the Reich government and gave him extraordinary powers over the Berlin city government. He was to report directly to Hitler and was independent of both the mayor and the Gauleiter of Berlin. The Gauleiter is essentially like the Nazi county commissioner.
I see.
So they didn't have a board, they just had one. Okay.
Well, essentially, within the like the Nazi party system, all of like German territory was divided up into what were called Gaus, which were kind of like counties, to give a closer analog to like the United States. It would be like if the Republicans had like a district, or I guess you could call it a district as well, but it's more in practice like a county, because they're not just like a politician who like represents that area. They also govern over it.
Gotcha. Okay.
Hitler ordered Speer to develop plans to rebuild Berlin. These centered on a 3 mile long grand boulevard running from north to south, which Speer called the Prachtstrasse, or Street of Magnificence. He also referred to it as the North-South Axis. At the northern end of the boulevard, Speer planned to build the Volkshalle, a huge domed assembly hall that was 700 feet high with floor space for 180,000 people. If this structure was... Which you can see like models of, if the structure was actually like completed, the inside of the building would have had its own weather system, was how big it would have been.
What?
Like it was so big that weather phenomena would develop within the dome of the building.
That's why I tell tricks about my, you know, maybe this is so big, I'm going to change the whole climate down there.
It's like everything that they did was kind of sort of in a weird funhouse mirror image of what the United States was doing, like the Capitol building, like the domed Capitol building, but the Nazis just had to go like way bigger. Jim Crow laws that Hitler himself like kind of mentioned, let's just go way the fuck bigger here in Europe. Like, it's crazy.
At the southern end of the avenue, a grand arch, almost 400 feet high and able to fit the Arc de Triomphe inside of its opening, was planned.
Why would you do that?
Because they have to be better.
Why would you build a building so big that you could just fit the Arc de Triomphe inside of it?
Because they have to be better. Because
it's bigger than the Arc de Triomphe.
Jesus Christ. These dudes have little dick syndrome to just an insane degree.
Oh, they're definitely members of the LDS. the Church of Little Dick Syndrome.
The existing Berlin railroad terminals were to be dismantled and two large new stations built.
They call them more minis. Oh shit, the Church of Little Dick Syndrome. The more minis.
Speer hired Wolters as part of the design team with special responsibility for the Prachtstrasse.
Of course.
The Prachtstrasse being the street, right?
Bitch speak.
Yeah, being speak like English, the main bitch. Avenue.
Okay.
The outbreak of World War II in 1939, though, led to the postponement of these plans and later them being abandoned, which after the Nazis surrendered, Speer himself considered to be awful.
So he knew it was dog shit and he still pushed forward through it.
what's very funny, because he kind of seems like he was high on his own supply, because in his autobiography he talks about how his father came to visit him at work and like looked at his plans and essentially told him, like, you guys are fucking crazy.
You guys know that you're fucking idiots, right? Get this shit off the table. Try again.
We're going to build the Homer car, but it's going to be a city. plans to build a new Reich chancellery had been underway since 1934. Land had been purchased by the end of 1934, and starting in March of 1936, the first buildings were demolished to create space at Volksstrasse, or at Vossstrasse.
What do you think about that city that, is it the Saudis that are trying to do, like the line?
Neom?
Neom? Is that the name of it?
Yeah, it's called like Neom.
Just the line.
Like, I think they quietly abandoned that recently. It's like never gonna happen.
Yeah, it was just ridiculous from the outset. Like, why would you think that was gonna be something that was gonna be functional at all? But anyway,
Speer was involved virtually from the beginning of these plans. In the aftermath of the Night of Long Knives, he had been commissioned to renovate the Borsig Palace on the corner of Vossstrasse and Wilhelmstrasse as headquarters for the SA. He completed the preliminary work for the new chancellery by May of 1936. In June of 1936, he charged a personal honorarium of 30,000 Reichsmark and estimated the chancellery would be completed within 3 to 4 years.
No shot, dog. No, absolutely not.
Detailed no plans problem. Were completed in July of 1937, and the first shell of the new building was complete on January 1st, 1938.
We're not doing genius work here. I got this out of the Sears catalog.
Tony January himself could not get that built that fast.
I got top men working on it.
Union labor would fuck that all up immediately.
He's got like,
and what happened Schultz to the Romans? We're right here, asshole.
He's got like security. Sergeant Schultz. He's got Sergeant Schultz sitting in like a folding chair reading a newspaper while they work on it. January 27th, 1938, Speer received plenipotentiary powers from Hitler to finish the new chancellery by January 1st, 1939. For propaganda, Hitler claimed during the topping out ceremony on August 2nd, 1938, he had ordered Speer to complete the new building that year. Shortages of labor meant the construction workers had to work in 10 to 12 hour shifts.
Wow.
Oh no.
That's the same shift.
The SS built two concentration camps in 1938 and used the inmates to quarry stone for its construction. A brick factory was built near the Oranienburg concentration camp at Speer's behest. When someone commented on the poor conditions there, Speer stated, this is him saying it, the Yids got used to making bricks while in Egyptian captivity.
You said the kids got used Yids. To making bricks?
No, the Yids, like Yiddish people. Like sort of like a derogatory term for Yiddish people.
It's like a slur. Okay. Wow.
You never heard Yids?
I never heard that before.
Oh.
I think after World War II, like Yiddish is like a language and it's like a culture sort of dies due to Israel.
Mm-hmm. That and I've heard much worse slurs. So
yeah.
No, but I mean, by comparison, we hear today, these assholes are just downright quaint.
The chancellery would be completed in early January of 1939. The building itself was hailed by Hitler as the quote unquote crowning glory of the greater German political empire. During this project, the pogrom of Kristallnacht took place. Speer made no mention of it in the final draft of Inside the Third Reich, his first autobiography. It was only on the urgent advice of his publisher that he added a mention of seeing the ruins of the Central Synagogue in Berlin from his car. Kristallnacht accelerated Speer's ongoing efforts to dispossess Berlin's Jews from their homes. From 1939 on, Speer's department used the Nuremberg laws to evict Jewish tenants of non-Jewish landlords in Berlin to make way for non-Jewish tenants displaced by redevelopment or bombing. Eventually, 75,000 Jews were displaced by these measures. Speer denied he knew they were being put on Holocaust trains and claimed that those displaced were, quote-unquote, completely free and their families were still in their apartments.
What are you talking about? What's a Holocaust? What are you talking about?
He would also...
Christy Nome.
I mean, he hasn't killed a dog yet.
Jesus Christ.
He also said, quote unquote, en route to my ministry on the city highway, I could see crowds of people on the platform of nearby Nikolassa railroad station. I knew that these must be Berlin Jews who were being evacuated. I am sure that an oppressive feeling struck me as I drove past. I presumably had a sense of somber events.
I mean, I'm sure I felt bad. I just can't remember. Fucking piece of shit.
Matthias Schmidt, a scholar, said Speer had personally inspected concentration camps and described his comments as a quote-unquote outright farce.
So he's like, he's saying it didn't even, like, they didn't exist? Or like, yeah, the events that
he's
people
saying,
are saying?
Well, no, he's saying it's a fucking farce. That's what he's saying.
It's a farce. Listen, it's fucking bullshit. Like, I went over there to the camps. They're full of fucking shit. And that shit ain't going on. It's fine.
Oh, my God.
Well, this is a common thing that happens with Spears. He will say, like, I had no idea what was going on, but the exact opposite is true because he was in charge of concentration camps. He inspected concentration camps.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like he's lying because he knows what he's doing is going to end up getting him to hang by a rope.
Well, we'll get to that. And this, remember, this is all written after that fact.
Gotcha.
This is not written during the war. This is written after the war.
Which is even crazier.
Martin Kitchen described Speer's often repeated line that he knew nothing of the quote-unquote dreadful things as hollow. Not only was he fully aware of the fate of the Jews, he actively participated in their persecution.
Ugh.
As Germany started World War II, Speer instituted quick reaction squads to construct roads or clear away debris. Before long, these units would be used to clear bomb sites. Speer used forced Jewish labor on these projects in addition to regular German workers.
Hmm. And shout out to all the Jewish laborers who would be like, hey, we're just actually going to sabotage everything you're doing at the risk of our own lives. Go fuck yourself, guys. Shout out to them.
Construction stopped on the Berlin and Nuremberg plans at the outbreak of the war. Though stockpiling materials and other work continued, this slowed to a halt as more resources were needed for the armament industry. Speer's offices undertook building work for each branch of the military and for the SS using slave labor. His building work made him among the wealthiest of the Nazi elite. As one of the younger and more ambitious men in Hitler's inner circle, Speer was approaching the height of his power. In 1938, Prussian minister president Hermann Göring had appointed him to the Prussian State Council. In September of 1940...
Didn't it recently come out that, like, Hermann Göring was probably gay? Or has it been known for a while?
It's debated. I don't think the answer was that he was gay.
He wasn't gay. He was just German, dude. You ever met a German? Like a for real German, you know?
Yeah.
They're Mark Felton.
They're just Northern European Italians, dude. They're just gay, you know? they're what the United States would call gay, you know?
Hey, I'm not perverted. I'm just Italian, okay? Listen.
Most of these, like, tough guy Italian guys in the U.S., if they went to Italy, they would be like, what the fuck are they all dressing like that for? I'm real Italian. Why has he got a midriff? What's up with that?
what's with all the V-deck Armani exchange?
All these fake Italians.
You know who shops at Armani Exchange where I'm from?
bucko.
In September of 1941, he was made a deputy to the Reichstag, succeeding to a vacancy created by the death of Unterkämpfer Hermann Kreibel. He represented electoral constituency 2, Berlin West. On February 8th, 1942.
That sounds like a low-budget movie. Election. What was the last one?
Electoral constituency 2, Berlin West.
Yeah, it's Berlin West. It's like the name of it, yeah. Start that AI shit.
Generated
yeah.
film
Put
title.
That shit in AI right now and tell us to start writing the script.
I'm gonna get Leslie Nielsen on the phone for this one.
Berlin West right now is just, you know, the White House.
On February 8th, 1942, Reich Minister of Armaments and Munitions Fritz Todt died in a plane crash shortly after taking off from Hitler's Eastern Headquarters at Rostenburg.
Fritz Todt, that's a good name, you know. You could say it backwards or forward, it's still good, you know. Todd Fritz, you know, Fritz Todd, go either way.
Speer arrived there the previous evening and accepted Todt's offer to fly with him to Berlin. Speer canceled some hours before takeoff because the previous night he had been up late in a meeting with Hitler. This is probably accurate because Hitler is one of those guys that stays up till like 4 a.m. and sleeps till noon.
He's a fucking meth, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's doing meth. He's doing a lot
Perverton.
Of
Vita Malton.
Hitler.
And I don't mean multivitamins.
Trump is constantly just mirroring Hitler, like just the insane amount of fucking drugs that he's doing. It's just instead of like a personal physician shooting him up, he's just snorting fucking Adderall or whatever the fuck he's doing. His health is poor. Like
he also had heinous like gastrointestinal issues that like apparently made him smell awful.
There is no way if you met Donald Trump that he does not smell like fucking salami. Like there's just no way.
No, dude, he smells like shitty diapers. And that's much worse.
I hate how you say that, and it's like supposed to be like funny, but it is 100% like verified by multiple people.
I wasn't trying to be funny.
No, I'm just, like,
I'm saying the fuck God's honest truth.
God. No, I understand, but it's just like it's such a fucking like you would normally say that as a joke, right? Like,
he's
like,
yeah, you see Obama shit his pants.
But like, there's multiple people who have like put that in writing, like. That is literally libel. They could be sued for, except for they're not. I wonder why.
Hitler appointed Speer in Todt's place. Martin Kitchen, a British historian, says this choice was not very surprising. Speer was loyal to Hitler, and his experience building prisoner of war camps and other structures for the military qualified him for the job. He had also been part of Todd's like sort of organization, which was sort of all architects and engineers.
Sounds like a fucking sounds like a boring chat room to me, bud.
That ICQ channel sucks, dog.
Speer succeeded Todt not only as Reich Minister, but in all his other powerful positions, including Inspector General of German Roadways, Inspector General for Water and Energy, and head of the Nazi Party's Office of Technology. At the same time, Hitler also appointed Speer as head of the organization Todt, a massive government-controlled construction company, the one I mentioned previously.
Wait a minute. Does that mean that this dickhead had his hand in the creation of the Autobahn?
Oh yeah. He was involved with the creation of the Autobahn, and they even used slave labor to build part of the Autobahn. Before the war even began.
Okay. You could have left that second part out. Okay. You didn't have to totally ruin everything in my life, Steven.
Yep.
You could have left that part out, man.
But the Autobahn is not in your life. Unless you're one of these assholes on I-4 that drives like it is.
Well, no, I wanted to go to Oktoberfest this year.
I
haven't had a chance to drive on the Autobahn, so now I gotta wonder if I'm driving over the crushed hopes and dreams of slave labor. God, thanks, Steve.
I mean, the better than the crushed car that you'd be driving in is you're driving 130 on the Autobahn.
Whole tribes, whole families and lineages of Indian people died under your feet right now.
Yeah, but see, I live here. I can ignore that.
Ah, okay. The truth will out.
Characteristically, Hayward did not give Speer any clear remit. He was left to fight his contemporaries in the regime for power and control, which was very common for Hitler. The Nazi regime was sort of characterized by chaos, mm-hmm. whereas Hitler wanted people to fight it out because he believed in this type of like Darwinian sort of management style where, mm-hmm. people would have to fight. And that's also why like all the like higher ups in the Nazi government like hated each other and were always competing with each other because it was always a fight to impress Hitler.
And it's always like what he said more than what he wrote down was official.
Because there was this letter that gets pointed out, and it was in this one BBC documentary where a Nazi party BBC. Member was complaining, where he was complaining to Hitler, I'm saying, like, ass. I should have been the local Gauleiter, but this guy got the position instead of me. And then Hitler wrote him back and essentially told him, well, if you're a tough guy or whatever, and you want to be it, then do what you have to do to be the Gauleiter. If you can't do that, then you shouldn't be, then you can't be the Gauleiter.
Bro. Did that guy end up killing the guy and becoming the Gauleiter?
I don't think so.
The Gauleiter. It sounds like we're talking about fucking Japanese, like, Super Sentai shows.
You know, Gauleiter Red's pretty popular with the ladies.
It's sweeping the Japanese Emmys.
Yeah, but Gauleiter Blue will get you fucked up faster. So yeah.
That's true. Gauleiter Blue is illegal in Florida.
I'm just saying. You do that Gauleiter Blue, you black out in the booth.
Definitely. Absolutely.
An example of this sort of relationship, he wanted to be given power over all armaments issued under Goring's four-year plan, but Goring was reluctant to grant this to him.
I just saw the black guy from I Think You Should Leave in the restaurant. He's trying to get the power. Give me that. Shit, it's so funny. Ryan, have you seen I Think You Should Leave?
No. It's on my Netflix list. Buddy, when I want to watch it. But like, yeah.
Please watch it. Please. Okay. It's so
like
good.
I know who it was, the name Tim Davis.
Tim Armstrong.
Tim Armstrong, yeah. Like I've seen like
Tim Robinson.
No, Tim Robinson. Yes, that's his name. I've seen like clips of it, like running through the drive-through and all the other bullshit. But like, yeah, I just have not sat down and watched it.
Oh, it's so good, dude! Give me that.
Speer though would secure Hitler's support, and on March 1, 1942, Goring signed a decree naming Speer general plenipotentiary for armament tasks.
Plenty potentially.
Plan.
I'm plenty potentially. Plenipotentiary.
Speer, this aspect, proved to be ambitious, unrelenting, and ruthless. He set out to gain control not just of armaments production in the army, but in the whole armed forces, which is a big deal because, like, the army and the air force are at odds, for instance, and the navy is sort of its own thing that's off to the side, and mm-hmm. they also have to contend with the SS. Like, if you see a guy in, like a World War II picture, and he's wearing a camouflage, like, jacket, he is most likely an SS guy because the SS had a patent on the camouflage jackets mm-hmm. and they were the only ones that could manufacture them until the end of the war. And they would not share them with anybody else. So only they got the camouflage jackets.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
And the camouflage jackets were so poorly designed that the process of like actually sewing them took so much work that if the Americans or Soviets made them, they would have been made in like half the time. Because every sort of like design they had, every sort of like thing they were making, it was so over engineered and like not designed for like a Fordist like factory principle that it just took forever to make. And that's why like the Americans and the Soviets just lapped them in production and every aspect.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, when you're hand making everything to be stylish more than functional. Yeah.
Well, it was like in order to design the smock that went over the uniform, you had to essentially make like two garments, and like the way it was sewed together was not like intuitive.
I don't understand why they would be so just convoluted, but you know, whatever. Nazis.
Like, I was watching a video, and it was about like World War II tanks that are still in like commission today.
What?
And they talked about, which there are some, most what? Of them T-34s or Shermans. But they talked about the Tiger tank, and that immediately after the war, no one adopted the Tiger tank or stole the design because it was so over-engineered and required so much maintenance and so much work that it wasn't worth the effort.
Just overcomplicating everything.
That is it. I give up on the tank.
Oh, yeah, have you seen a fucking BMW or a Mercedes engine? They're fucking overcomplicated nonsense.
They're older complex, yeah. What are you talking about? BMWs are well known for their reliability. They last forever.
Yeah. Oil leaks, never heard of
them. I've never even heard of a BMW, like, you know, being under 30,000 miles, you know?
Yeah, they come off the factory floor with 36,000 miles on them leaking oil.
They are one of the most notoriously unreliable vehicles on the market. There's not even a fucking question.
They come with a reverse warranty where that is that
yo, it ain't the, even the a dealership, question.
They'll just fuck them up more for you.
Every BMW dealership is like those like cursed marketplaces where you buy a cursed item and then when you turn around, it's gone.
Nice.
I can't even.
That's what happened to me tonight. We went to Raising Cane's. And I ordered the food before we got there. We get there and we walk in, and there's no food in the pickup like area. You know, they put them all on that like slide, and you're just supposed to pick them up. And I also got some stupid Olympics plush because my wife thought it was cute. So I was like, oh, I'll get that. And the guy's like looking around for the food, and he's like, someone stole your food. I'm like, okay.
Not like we'll remake it.
No. They immediately gave me the food. Like, he gave us, like, larges of everything, too. So, it was like, that was pretty cool. But as we're walking out the door, there's, like, this gaggle of teenagers there. And the one dude's like, yo, I can't believe I stole two of them.
Jesus Christ.
Speer's actions don't immediately dawn on his rivals that he's attempting to, like, sideline them and take control. Speer was also credited with a quote-unquote armaments miracle during the winter of 1941-42, in light of Germany's defeat in the Battle of Moscow. The German leadership, including Friedrich Fromm, George Thomas, and Fritz Todt, had concluded that the war could not be won. That's one of the theories about like why Todt's like plane crashed, is that he was possibly assassinated due to like saying like we need to make a white peace with the Soviets.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that would immediately get you killed.
The rational position to adopt was to seek a political solution that would end the war without defeat. Speer, in response, used his propaganda expertise to display a new dynamism of the war economy. He produced spectacular statistics, claiming a sixfold increase in munitions production, a fourfold increase in artillery production, and he sent further propaganda to the newsreels of the country. He was able to, he was able to curtail any discussion that the war should be ended. This miracle, though, was a myth. Speer had used statistical manipulation to support his claims. The productions of armaments did rise, however, this was due to the normal causes of reorganization before Speer came to office, the relentless mobilization of slave labor, and a deliberate reduction of the quality of output to favor quantity. One thing about Germany as well is that Germany doesn't really go into war footing until like 1942 as well. Because World War I had been so disastrous for Germany that Hitler was very adverse to putting like wartime conditions on the German people. So he sort of does like the George W. Bush in that, like, we're going to fight a war, but everybody needs to go out. They just need to act like nothing's happening. And better yet, they just need to start spending money they don't have like they haven't.
What the fuck is... Every time I, like, learn new shit about Germany from, like, 1934 to, like, 1947, it's always just the dumbest shit imaginable.
Yes.
When then you look back and you're just like, how? Yes, how did you get away with all this fucking shit? Y'all are retarded. Sorry for the slur. You can bleep that out if you want, but I don't care, dude. It's that they deserve the hard
popular opinion. It's a populist movement, not an intelligent one.
Like, how did you get away with that? It's so stupid. Everything is so fucking stupid. And it's the exact same thing that's going to happen in 100 years in this country. People are going to look back and be like, it's so fucking stupid. Everything is so stupid. Why did you guys not fix that immediately? And nobody's going to have a good answer.
Some problems actually need a war.
No.
By April of 1942, Speer had persuaded Göring to create a 3-member central planning board within the 4-year plan, which he used to obtain supreme authority over procurement and allocation of raw materials and scheduling of production to consolidate German war production in a single agency.
Dude, why don't you throw a comma in that sentence, dog? Holy shit.
During this time, Speer would be a celebrity. And in the post-war era as well for performing quote-unquote an armaments miracle.
See on Johnny Carson? Like,
he had his own reality show.
Yeah. I'm going on Milton Boyle.
Well, you know, people like, it's like the myth about like Germany, like, oh no, they were so advanced and they were so organized. Like it's sort of built into that sort of myth. Like, oh no, if you look at the numbers, like Speer really did a miracle. Like he gave them impossible numbers. It's like, yeah, he gave him impossible numbers because they were impossible numbers.
Yeah, they're literally impossible, bro.
This miracle would come to a halt, though, in the summer of 1943. And one of the first factors that sort of stopped this was the beginning of a sustained Allied bombing campaign on Germany.
Okay. Oh, good.
It's almost like when you destroy their production facilities, they can't produce. Huh.
Yeah. Naval armaments were not under Speer's supervision until October of 1943, and the Luftwaffe's armaments were not under his until June of 1944. And these industries also showed the same trends and increases that Speer was claiming were his own. So it shows that this was just a general trend in like Germany's like arms production.
Okay.
Another factor that produced the boom that he claimed was his own was the policy of allocating more coal to the steel industry.
Just my boom.
Production of every type of weapon peaked in June and July of 1944, but there was now a severe shortage of fuel. And by July of 1943, all of this propaganda also became irrelevant because a number of defeats on the battlefield in Eastern Europe and elsewhere, meant the prospect of losing the war could no longer be hidden from the German people.
Hey, guys. Listen. Things aren't going great. yeah, just want to let y'all get ready for the inevitable letdown, surrender, what have you. But
listen, yeah. I just want you all to know that I'm going to be all right. Okay.
I'm fine. I mean, just you know, quell your fears. Fucked. I'm okay. You need to, y'all, yeah.
If y'all you see Russians coming, you better rush away.
I can see Russians over the horizon. Good luck, guys. me, but I'm hoping the Eagles.
They learned how to fly. I don't get it.
We got champagne.
loading a suitcase and drops a train ticket to like Madrid.
We're popping bottles in here. We got nicely, perfectly cooked steak. Good luck, though, guys.
After August of 1944, oil from the Romanian oil fields were no longer available. Oil production became so low that any possibility of offensive action became impossible, and weaponry lay idle. As Minister of Armaments, Speer was responsible for supplying weapons to the army. With Hitler's full agreement, he decided to prioritize tank production, and he was given unrivaled power to ensure success.
Oh boy, okay.
Hitler was closely involved with the design of the tanks, but kept changing his mind about the specifications. This obviously delayed the program, and Speer was unable to remedy the situation. A consequence of this, despite tank production having been given a high priority, relatively little of the armaments budget was spent on it. This led to a major German failure at the Battle of Prokhorovka, Prokhorovka in 1943, a major turning point on the Eastern Front against the Red Army.
How hot was she, though, you know?
What is she up to nowadays?
Probably sex work.
I remember having like a Maxim magazine with her on it back in the day and being like, yeah, she's hot.
Yep. She's probably
no Maxim. Only fans.
She's probably just teaching chess or tennis, and
she was in the Epstein files.
She was definitely in the Epstein files. He splattered with balls for her career. Good God.
As the head of organization Tot, Speer was directly involved in the construction and alteration of concentration camps. Mm-hmm. He agreed to expand Auschwitz and some other camps, allocating 13.7 billion Reichsmarks for the work to be carried out. This allowed an extra 300 huts to be built at Auschwitz, increasing the total human capacity to 132,000. This included buildings to the facility, such as gas chambers, a crematoria, and morgues. The SS called this Professor Speer's special program. Speer realized that with 6 million workers drafted into the armed forces, there was a labor shortage in the war economy and not enough workers for his factories. In response, Hitler appointed Fritz Sauckel.
I want you to go to Home Depot. I want you to pick some guys up.
They'll be there first thing in the morning, 6:30.
Highway 50 to Orlando. Go. Every day.
Give them 100 bucks at the end of the day. They're going to break their backs for you. Handle business.
ICE has left them alone because ICE is hiring from there, man.
Hitler appointed Fritz Sauckel as a manpower dictator to obtain new workers. Speer and Sauckel cooperated closely to meet Speer's labor demands. Fritz Sauckel.
No, you said Speer and Sauckel.
What's S-A-U-C-K-E-L?
Yes, I'll take one uns Speer and Sauckel. Sounds it's like ice cream with like, I don't know, fucking gravy on it or some shit, you know?
Yeah, I love stroopwafels. Why?
Yeah. You know, I am plenipotentiary. Yeah, you're plenipotentiary.
The two would work together closely, and Hitler gave Sauckel a free hand to obtain labor, something that delighted Speer, who had requested 1 million voluntary laborers to meet the need for armament workers.
Voluntary. I am imagining gigantic air quotes around voluntary.
Well, Sauckel had whole villages in France, Holland, and Belgium forcibly rounded up and shipped to Speer's factories.
Like I said, the biggest air quotes you've ever seen in your life around voluntary.
He also obtained new workers, often using the most brutal tactics. In occupied areas of the Soviet Union that had been subject to partisan action, civilian men and women were rounded up en masse and sent to work forcibly in Germany. By April of 1943, Sauckel had supplied 1,568,801 voluntary laborers, forced laborers, prisoner of war, and concentration camp prisoners to Speer for use in his armaments factories.
How many laborers?
1,568,801.
It sounds like a fake number, like he's just making it up. Oh, it yeah. Like you want to know how many I have? I have 1,200,851,000,000,000.
It sounds like fucking rent is what it sounds like.
It really does, yeah. A month.
It was mainly these actions that Speer was principally convicted of at the Nuremberg trials. Following his appointment as Minister of Armaments, Speer was in control of armaments production solely for the army. He wanted control of production of armaments for the Luftwaffe and Kriegsmarine as well. The Kriegsmarine is the Navy. He set about extending his power and influence with unexpected ambition. His close relationship with Hitler provided him with political protection, and he was able to outwit and outmaneuver his rivals within the regime. Hitler's cabinet was dismayed at his tactics, but regardless, he was able to accumulate new responsibilities and more power. By July of 1943, he gained control of armaments production for the Luftwaffe and the Kriegsmarine. In August of 1943, he took control of most of the Ministry of Economics to become, in Admiral Donitz's words, Europe's economic dictator. Mm. His formal title was changed on September 2nd, 1943, to Reich Minister of Armaments and War Production. He would become one of the most powerful people in Nazi Germany. Speer and his handpicked director of submarine construction, Otto Berker, believed that the shipbuilding industry was being held back by outdated methods, and revolutionary new approaches imposed by outsiders would dramatically improve output. This belief proved incorrect, and Speer and Merker's attempt to build the Kriegsmarine's new generation of submarines, the Type 21 and Type 23, as prefabricated sections at different facilities rather than at single dockyards contributed to the failure of the strategically important program. Most submarines are made like when you make the hull of a submarine, you make it as one. You generally don't put it together like
the Kriegs canoe.
No, because it needs to be fucking pressurized. What is this guy, the great-great-grandfather of Stockton fucking Rush? Did he have a goddamn Mad Catz controller trying to fucking drive his submarines too? Jesus Christ, dude.
He did. He bought the Mad Catz version. He didn't get the pro version.
That's his niche. I didn't steer it, Leo. That's his Mad Catz controller.
That's just Mad Catz.
It's not even proprietary. What is this shit?
Mad Catz.
Also, why is the case to the Mad Catz controller clear? I don't understand this. Why is that?
These designs were rushed into production, and these completed submarines were obviously crippled by construction flaws. While dozens of submarines were built, few ever entered service.
Yeah, because they sunk in the fucking shipyard because they couldn't take on water.
they release it from the dry dock, it just collapses like under pressure at surface level, it just catches fire.
Bro, I cannot play fucking Wolfenstein anymore because they gave these assholes way too much credit in their abilities in building things. I'm gonna play Wolfenstein and just look at shit and be like, there's no way. There's absolutely no fucking way they would have built that and it would have been successful.
In December of 1943, Speer visited organization Todd Workers in Lapland, where he seriously damaged his knee and was incapacitated for several months.
I think there's a Lapland in Florida down on OBT.
Yeah, but yeah, you get... lap dances thing.
That was the joke, pal. Oh my god.
He just kept asking Varus Rachel's.
I need a steakhouse.
Was it because he was repeatedly bending it for Hitler? Like, what, how did he hurt his knee?
Well, I think just visiting the construction site, he damaged his knee. And he was under the dubious care of a Professor Carl Gebhardt at a medical clinic called the Hohenlicken, where patients, quote-unquote, mysteriously failed to survive.
Really? I feel like in today's modern medicine, if a doctor charted that a patient just shrug, failed to survive, there would be questions. People would have serious inquiries into this physician.
In mid-January 1944, Speer had a lung embolism and fell seriously ill. Concerned about retaining power, he did not appoint a deputy and continued to direct work of the armaments ministry from his bedside.
Too bad his fucking PE couldn't have killed him.
Speer's illness coincided with the Allies' big week, quote-unquote, a series of bombing raids on the German aircraft factories that were a devastating blow to aircraft production.
I met someone who took part in those bombings at my brother's wedding. This old guy that was like an usher at the church.
That's sick. Yeah, did they really call it the big week?
Yeah, because it was just like a week-long like bombing campaign.
Okay.
He told us this story like in the sacristy of the church about how he was going over and he knew that the air yard they were going over was fake because they used like fake depots and stuff like that,
right,
to avoid bomb. And so he didn't bomb it. And then when they got to the real one, he bombed it. And so they were successful. I was like, nice. Oh shit. Really?
It's crazy. Like, you back in the day, you know, the younger audience won't understand this, but back in the day, Walmart used to have these greeters at the front door that would like literally greet you when you walked in and give you a sticker on your product if you were going to return something, right? These people were all, by and large, median age 134. So guaranteed some of these people would have fucking served like in World War II. And here they are just putting a fucking happy face sticker on something that your dumbass was too stupid to fucking buy.
This guy was just like a member of like the Knights of Columbus. You know, my brother had wanted to have him at the mass.
brave heroes who took the Philippines, stopped the Kaiser, and defeated Hitler.
And now they're standing fast at the Walmart doors to say hello to your ungrateful ass. Show some fucking respect.
The greatest generation. They're watching
silent.
I swear
their hail's not met.
I passed so many Walmart greeters that were like wearing those hats, like the military hats, where it was like on the boat they served on and shit, and like what war they were in and shit. Oh God, I used to get so.
You gotta say thank you for your service, like every time.
No, I would say, why are you here, dude? Retire, go live a nice life. You serve, man. Go chill. And then also before you chill, though, stick the sticker on this blender that I need to go turn off.
I just think there was that Onion article about the guy in the World War II parade. It was just like thinking about all the pussy he's gonna get afterwards.
Where are you going after this, Mike? I'm going to Gashtown, if you know what I mean. Gash.
Gonna find me Goosville. A good time girl.
Goosville, if you know what I mean.
Oh God.
And that, boys, is where we'll leave off, and we will pick up with the fate of one Albert Speer.
I'm going to guess he dies.
I mean, we all die at some point.
I mean, yeah.
Who could say?
What the fuck are you saying?
So what you're saying is I'm right.
So you're saying there's a chance.
<That's> correct.
All right. And with that, I'm going to go watch figure skating on the Olympics.
Good night. Good luck.
Go listen to Three Doors Down, some Kryptonite. Y'all be good.
Good night.